A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. As always, a big thank you to the good, community-minded people at Horicon Bank. Happy Easter weekend, everyone. Hope you're taking some time to unplug, to recharge, enjoying time with family and friends, for sure. This week on the show, we're talking about the worlds that maybe we plug back into. Apple's bold move to open up Siri to every AI under the sun. What happens when your favorite beer costs more than your seat? And what happens when your sunshine costs too much as well? And what happens when that phone is banned when you're entering the Chick-fil-A? I don't know, but I think our guest will. Martin Moore is back. He's got some sharp takes on where tech and money and marketing are all heading. As always, we're going to pull it apart through a creator's lens. That's why I like talking to Martin. He's got this creator, business, marketing lens that's always truly interesting. It's the future of almost everything with Martin Moore. And I'm Jeff Sherman. Also, I got to tell you, Apple's new emojis in this new drop, are you using them? What are they? I don't know. We're going to tell you. It's the upswing. Quickly, as we do each and every morning, we're going to go two up.
Now it's time for the
two, count 'em, two.
Two up on the upswing.
Two things in the business world that I'm seeing that you need to know about right now. One, population growth has slowed across the nation in most counties last year, and specifically, Milwaukee County is no exception. After posting its first population gain in a decade in 2024, the county slipped backwards in 2025, according to new census data, losing only 107 people. But it makes me think it is time for a boomerang strategy for our county. Let's go to people who moved out of the state, who moved out of the county, and let's figure out incentives to get people to move back to Milwaukee County. Second up, new to you on the river in downtown Milwaukee. This weekend, I just learned the new restaurant, Josa on the River at 106 West Wells, will hold its soft opening, giving diners a first glimpse into this new restaurant atmosphere and menu, all with riverside views. I lived at this building for years. There were two restaurants in the building, both closed. Most recently, the space was Pier 106 and Port of Call. Josa on the River is going to create a new dining destination. It opens this weekend. The grand opening will be April 10th.
It's time to fast forward. Welcome to the future of almost everything in Wisconsin on the upswing. Joining WTMJ's Jeff Sherman, here's Martin Moore.
Welcome back to the upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio by Martin Moore. It's the future of almost everything. We're back. Easter weekend. Martin, thanks for taking time.
Always, Jeff.
All right.
It's nice to see your face.
It is great
to be
see
in your
you
presence
too.
And
it
just
is
feel
awesome.
Your aura.
It is. Oh, I appreciate that. We could do the whole show on Apple, I think, and phones. There's a lot on Apple's plate right now. I think Apple seems to be playing the AI game pretty well. You go back maybe 6 months ago or so, and people were like, oh, what's Apple doing with Siri? What's Apple doing with AI? They're not in the game. But they're not developing their own platform. They're kind of inviting everyone to the party. So I want to get your take on this. Apple's planning to open up Siri to run on any AI service via the App Store. This will be iOS 27, which will be the next drop for them. So if Siri becomes this app store of AI, Martin, where's that customer relationship going to be? Like, they want to be the front door, the app store for Claude, for Gemini, for Gronk, for Perplexity, all these AI providers in the app store. Like, who's the customer then, and where's innovation come from on the Apple side? That's a big question, but there's a lot going on here.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, it was only couple years ago where Apple, you know, Tim Cook stood up on the stage in Cupertino and unveiled Apple Intelligence, and it was supposed to be the next greatest thing in AI because, you know, unlike Claude and Copilot and ChatGPT and all the others, Apple Intelligence was going to be predicated on keeping your user data safe.
Yeah.
Well, now, you know, you sign up for all these other ones through Apple, and that's no longer the case. You know, it needs your data. It needs to scrape your images to create new images for you and copy and stuff. And so when it comes to just sort of the customer relationship with Apple and, like, let's say you and me, it's going to be interesting how they navigate this uncharted territory where, you know, your data may not be as secure and as safe and as encrypted as it once used to be. Yeah. And I'm going to be curious how they kind of navigate that and articulate that to customers and handle that, because there may be some sort of, you know, behind closed door handshake that they make with OpenAI or Microsoft or Google.
Because they had an exclusive partnership with ChatGPT
early on.
That was the exclusive outside partner.
Correct.
And now, hey, the door's open.
Correct. On the flip side, though, you know, if you're OpenAI or if you're Google or any of these AI companies, your business model with AI is predicated on getting as much information and data from the people who use your services, so you
exactly.
can continue to train these large language models and these generative AI models and these chatbots. And so that relationship between Apple and these AI companies is going to be interesting. So sort of like a three-way relationship, that a menage a trois, if you will, of data security and what information can they gather. And I'm just going to be really curious what that looks like.
Yeah. And kudos to Apple for kind of playing maybe a little bit of a longer game here. Mm-hmm. Like, they're the toll road for these companies
Correct.
To come in. And it's up to us as customers to have that
Right.
amount of wisdom, if you will, to
Right.
pick and choose the right one. But now it will be interesting to see how it all plays out. Another new thing on the Apple side, they quietly discontinued the Mac Pro desktop mm-hmm. last week and focusing on Mac Studio, which has been around since 2022. Mac Pro was like a $7,000 machine.
Oh, to start, you could get that bad boy up to like $45,000. Easy.
So what does this say? And the last time you were here, we talked about the Mac Nano. What does this say about Apple now, moving away from the big, big, big machine?
I think it says a lot. You know, Apple Silicon has just gotten incredibly efficient and powerful, especially with these new M5 and the M5 Pro chips. The Mac Studio outperforms all of the old Mac Pros. And so it just really shows you Apple's really nailed these chips, and they're making just massive leaps in power efficiency and processing and everything that it can do. They don't need a giant desktop computer anymore. They can all do it, one in a smaller footprint, and it's just less materials to manufacture. You look at the old Mac Pros, I mean, it's massive. You're talking about a lot of aluminum, a lot of titanium, a lot of steel,
yeah.
a lot of screws and nuts and bolts and Teflon and all this stuff.
Yeah.
If you can compress that down into something that's a fraction of the size and the price to manufacture and still keep a relatively good margin,
yeah.
it's advantageous for them and for the
totally.
Customer. And
fewer towers, more sealed AI-optimized boxes. That's
right,
where
right.
Apple's going
right.
for sure. Any of the new Apple emojis excite you?
No, I looked at when you sent it to me. I think it was yesterday. I looked at it and I was like, meh.
Nah.
I mean,
the orca killer whale, like that, you haven't added that to
if
your
you're
use?
On a vacation and you're at SeaWorld, that one will come in handy. But
eight new concepts on the Apple emoji keyboard with a new drop. Distorted face, fight cloud, kind of that cartoon style cloud.
Yeah.
A ballet dancer, five additional skin tone colors. So that's
nice.
Good. The orca killer whale we mentioned, like some kind of new hairy creature, kind of a Bigfoot type
It looks like
thing.
A Sasquatch.
Yeah, that, Sasquatch.
I may use that one.
Okay,
I may use
add that.
That one may get used.
There's a trombone. There never used to be a trombone. That's
no.
kind of nice. A landslide and a treasure chest. Right. Those are the new emojis from iOS 26.4 also has, as I mentioned, a bunch of new skin tone combinations, people wrestling, people with bunny ears, all that fun stuff. Bunny ears. It is Easter weekend.
Easter's coming up. Get it out so we can use it.
All right. I want to stay on this phone topic.
Mm.
And I want to go to Chick-fil-A, if I may. Select Chick-fil-A restaurants are now offering free ice cream to families who agree to put their phones away as they have their meal, part of an effort to encourage more face-to-face time, less screen use at tables. I think the bigger question here is, hey, and kudos to the local ownership at Chick-fil-A who are doing this. It's a creative thing for sure. And they're marrying it with this coop that they put on the table and the phones all go in there and then the families sit around and eat Chick-fil-A and smile and laugh at each other.
Sure.
But should restaurants ban phones, Martin?
No, I don't think they should ban phones. Okay. I think the reason, you know, Chick-fil-A one is trying this and why they can get away with it is because if you know anything about the family and the company, you know, they have more traditional values and, you know, their clientele may be a little bit different than, let's say, like a McDonald's or a Hardee's or Arby's or something like that. And so, you know, there may be people in there that do. They want to put the phone down and they want to eat some nuggets or a sandwich with the kids and not have them on their phones. Yeah. And so I think it's a great idea. I mean, I love like how Madonna, when she does concerts, they collect your phones.
Right.
Anything that keeps people off their phones and helps them ensconce themselves in their family and their friends and coworkers and stuff, I'm all for trying it. And if it's not forced,
totally.
But it's incentivized with free ice cream.
Exactly, right. If there's some incentive to do so.
I may participate.
And if there's a creative packaging on the table, like Chick-fil-A is doing this coupe, maybe a really cool box or something. Hey, the phones go here. Let's have our food.
Yeah.
And let's talk to each other and look each other in the eye.
I like that.
I'm
a fan of that.
All right.
Old school communication.
That's right. Martin Moore, when we come back, lots of topics on the plate still. We're going to talk Sora. We are going to talk beer prices, not only in Chicago this past weekend, but right here at American Family Field. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio by Martin Moore. It's the future of almost everything. Martin, I want to stay on this technology angle that we're at right here before we dive into a bunch of other topics. But last week, OpenAI decided to shut down Sora. For those that don't know, Sora was their AI video generation tool, actually only 6 months old. And they said, all right, public release, done. Truth is, I'm not sure this was a huge deal, but probably inside the company, way bigger than we as consumers see. What happened here, and what debate is this going to spark for the future of AI images?
So OpenAI never really admitted or confessed or told the public, you know, sort of why they shut it down. But the general consensus is that, you know, when Sora first launched, it immediately got like a million users and it just started to plummet from that. I think when they closed it, it had maybe like, I think 6 months later, it was already down to a half a million.
Okay.
But even the users that were using it, it was just using gobs of processing power and energy, and it was costing them a ton of money to just
set at least $1 million
a day
in capital costs
to keep it running. And they just were lacking resources to sort of keep up with the things that, you know, Cloud AI were doing and Copilot and all the other AI companies. And so they're like, let's just shut it down. It's not making us any money. Let's shut it down, divert our resources into some of the other things that our competitors are now starting to like surpass us in. And so I think that's the general thesis of why they shut it down.
I've seen some people say, you know, that the app had invited users initially to upload their phone faces.
Correct, which I did.
Do you think there's some kind of elaborate data play going on here?
Another thing was Disney was going to heavily invest in Sora.
Yes. I think they committed $1 billion
exactly,
early on.
But they
right?
didn't until, or maybe they haven't yet, but they didn't publicly commit to anything until after Sora was shut down. And one of the reasons is Hollywood, and rightly so, was getting very upset at Sora because it was taking – people were making celebrities alive and dead say things and do things that they weren't doing, and this stuff was going viral without their consent, without royalties or commissions or anything like that. And I think that was really bothering Disney. And so I think it was multifaceted. I think there was a lot of things where they were just like, yeah, let's shelf this and focus on other things.
Yeah, and maybe wait for the next generation, whatever that may be.
Right.
I mean, what do you think that next generation is for AI image tools? Like, what works?
I hope it's not
Sora. What doesn't?
I hope it's not Sora, because I really, when I used it, it was fun. I was making Mr. Rogers say all kinds of funny things. But, you know, once I started using it for more than just a laugh, I started to realize that, like, this is a very dangerous tool, making people who never gave their consent to say things and do things and put it on the internet and go viral.
Yeah.
That's a huge ethical and moral problem that we need to, as users, need to figure out, and, you know, Congress and stuff needs to also figure out legally. And so when it comes to that and the prompt-generated video and using other people's likeness, I think there needs to be a much deeper conversation on how we're going to navigate that, because I see a lot of issues with it.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's getting easier in some ways to detect AI-generated images online. And in other ways, it's not. And when you start messing with what people are used to or what gives us joy even, I've heard a lot of people say this in the in the days since Sora's gone away, like the puppy videos, the dog videos, those videos that make us feel something.
Yeah.
When we start to know that those aren't real,
right,
then the consumer says, you know what? I'm done with this.
It cheapens
because
the experience.
I want the real thing.
Exactly. And, you know, I think people have gotten – I've said this before, and I think I've said it on this show. I'm genuinely shocked at how keen people are at, like, being able to pick out AI-generated stuff. Everyone is so skeptical.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great thing, but it's also a bad thing. I've seen a lot of photographers and filmmakers and creators making stuff and people claiming it's created by AI. There was this really famous photo that this guy did a couple months ago where he shot a photo of a guy jumping out of an airplane, skydiving, and captured it in front of a fully lit moon. And everyone thought it was AI, and he had to make a literally a behind-the-scenes video of how he did it to prove to people.
Totally,
some people still didn't believe him.
Yeah.
And so this whole AI conversation is very slippery and convoluted and deep, and I don't know where it goes.
I just know don't make those videos of, you know, little kids seeing for the first time putting on glasses.
Yeah.
Don't make those AI, because those are inspirational. They make me cry,
exactly.
And I want to know that they're real, right?
And you want to save your feelings and your compassion and your empathy and your sympathy for something that's real, not something that's fake.
Yes. I also want my beer prices to be, you know, in line with where my budget is. Go to Chicago last weekend for the NCAA tournament. Fans reacted pretty strongly when they saw concession prices. $19.25, Martin, for a premium beer. $9 for a bottle of water. And it was Culligan water. I haven't had a bottle of Culligan water in a while, but $9. $10.25 for a soda and $10 for a hot dog.
$10 for a hot dog.
$10 for a hot dog.
That is obscene.
But you go to American Family Field here, where our wonderful Brewers play. They brought back the optimism with opening day for sure. But everyone was asking, all right, what do the beer prices look like? Go up to section 420. Here's the laundry list of prices. $11.35 for a domestic beer for a can. Premium beers, $14.49. New Glarus Spotted Cow, $12.49. But they were selling hams, 12-ounce cans, for $5. Not a bad deal.
That's not bad. If you like hams, it's your lucky day. If you don't like hams, means nothing to you.
Still not cheap, but in this world of stadium concessions, it's a pretty good budget play.
Sure.
So I say kudos to the Brewers for offering it. But do you think that's going to have some challenges in the long run? Do you sell the cheaper product at risk of knowing that, hey, you know what? I want the Miller Lite, and it's, whoa.
Right.
$7 more.
I mean, I think there's a market for that. I think there's people that might come there with their family and they're not ready to blow $500 on a Brewers game. I mean, like, let me ask you a question. What's the most you're going to pay for a beer at American Family Field? Let's say you're going with the whole family.
Yeah, I think you've been conditioned probably at that like $12 to $13 mark.
Sure.
Because that's what I'm used to at events now. But the Chicago prices, like for the tournament last weekend, I don't know. $19 seems like too much, and I don't think I would.
Right.
Even I could,
right,
for sure. But you buy three beers and you're at $60, and like that to me just seems like a little too much.
I always kind of equate just like sports venues and like their pricing models to subscription services like Netflix. I think they're going to do the same thing where they're just going to chip away at you every year or two and raise it by $1, $1, $1. And they'll know when they hit that sweet spot where sales starts to recede.
Yeah.
And I think they're just going to push the public for as much as they can until the public reacts and stops buying, and then they'll kind of pull it back.
They have the data. They're going to see the buying party.
Speak with your wallet.
For sure. That's right.
Buy the hams.
Now, this, a little aside here, I do find it somewhat odd and maybe mildly creative. The NA beer prices, much less than the alcoholic beer. Even at American Family Field, $5.25 for a can of Coors Edge.
Yep.
So if you're not drinking or you're pacing yourself or whatever,
have an NA
$5.25. That's crazy.
So I don't drink beer, but I do drink NA Coronas. You put two limes in that thing, you can't tell the difference.
Yes.
So you could, even if you wanted to save some money, do a Coors Light and then do an NA.
Yeah.
And then do a Coors Light, and then do an NA, alternate. By the end of the game, you'll probably be saved 40, 50, 60
bucks.
Saving
money and saving your liver at the same time.
I like that.
That's a good thing. No matter what, kudos to the Brewers for the creativity and the pricing and keeping the prices at a level that's good for all of us. Also, big credit to the bartenders at American Family Field. Like, they're really friendly. They're fast. They're clearly ready for the game day volume, yes, and always there to serve with a smile, which just makes the experience all that much better. Martin Moore, it's the future of almost everything. When we come back, marketing to individuals. I got some personalization questions for you. And we're going to talk about community building via TV. Also, would you pay for sunshine? You got a lot of sunshine going on, but would you pay for it at night? This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. It's the future of almost everything with Martin Moore from Koss. I'm Jeff Sherman. Thanks for being here. Martin, in just about every category that we're seeing, from food to fashion to entertainment to health, experiences are becoming more and more personalized, customized. We all have our own algorithms. And every brand promises deeper understanding of what they're all about, but also giving us better understanding of who we are about. You spend your day marketing to consumers around Koss's headphones, the wonderful products you sell. But how do you keep personalized marketing, especially at Koss, how do you keep it personal, still speak to the individual, but not being too aligned to the algorithm? Does that make sense? Like, how do you keep things real to us, but also not be too mass audience?
So you're basically asking, you know, to not be like SEO friendly and algorithmically friendly and try and game the system for exposure, but to really speak to the customer.
Exactly.
You know, my mantra and ethos has always just been, whatever product that we make and we sell, figure out how that is going to make people's lives better and enrich them lives and be useful to them. And then just translate that into a photo or some copy or an Instagram reel. And it will pick up traction. And the algorithm sort of doesn't really make any kind of difference. I remember when I first started, I would make these really nice, these beautiful commercials. And I'd spend all this time making things look pretty and do all this stuff. And the commercials and videos got lots of views and some engagement and stuff. But lately, I've been just doing really raw, like, Instagram reels, mm-hmm, of just like unboxing a product and or talking and being funny in front of the camera. And the engagement and likes and shares are probably, I'm not even being hyperbolic, probably 1,000 times what it used to be. And it's such like low effort to make. It makes me happy because it makes my job easier. But I think just being real with people and conveying to them why this headphone or this stand or this speaker is going to make their vacation better or make their run more enjoyable or make editing music or doing a podcast easier and more efficient. And that really has spoken to people.
So it's still possible in this day of modern,
absolutely,
marketing to speak to one person and to speak to the individual and appeal to everyone at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think marketing to one person is as individualistic as like people might think it is. Yeah. Most people you can sort of like break down and fragment into a handful of categories. So it's not very difficult to like hyper target a particular kind of person, but mm-hmm, still keep it broad and general enough that you're going to get a large chunk of your following.
Yeah. Speaking of hyper targeting, in terms of what's next at Koss, I saw in the Business Journal recently that Koss had hired an M&A advisor,
sure,
on the team. What are you looking to do from a company standpoint? Is that expansion into other headphones and audio equipment, or is it looking to grow the business even more strategically?
You know, we're really looking to sort of acquire businesses. Who, you know, maybe it's a family-owned business that, you know, they're looking to sell. They don't have anyone to pass it down to, but they want to keep it in good hands. They don't want it to be liquidated. They don't want someone coming in and completely rearranging everything and changing everything they maybe had spent years or decades building. And something that, you know, that we can invest in and help someone else grow that maybe they no longer have the capacity or the time or the desire to do. And so, you know, we'll see where that goes. But, you know, we're actively working and networking and trying to connect and see if there's anyone out in the, you know, Wisconsin or greater Midwest area that's interested in, you know, selling. If you are, acquisitions at cost.com. We'll get a hold of you.
All right. And you're anchored right here in Milwaukee.
Yes,
the home of the stereo
headphones. Been here 70 years.
Born here. That's a good thing. And that's the way you grow strategically, by staying attached to the heartland and the lack of pretense that we bring to our business principles right here in greater Milwaukee. All right. I want to ask you, I've got a couple things. I want to get to this Buy Sunshine company out in California. But first, you watching anything on any of your streaming platforms now that you are learning from? Teach my kids, you know, when you make the investment to watch a show, I think you should learn something from it, and you should grow from it.
Sure.
Any shows that you're watching right now that you get that feeling?
I just finished season 3 of Love on the Spectrum, which is basically a dating show where they follow people with autism on different, obviously different levels of the spectrum. And every time that season comes out, I really learn a lot just about human beings and their capacity to love and desire companionship. I love that one. Okay. One that I'm really excited to watch that's on my list that just came out is called, I think it's called The Manosphere. And it's basically a small documentary.
I think it's on Netflix. Yeah.
It seems like they're trying to get into sort of like, what is masculinity and performative masculinity and what it means to be a man. And I go on a diatribe about that whole thing, but that one looks like it's really good. And then there's another one that we just finished called, oh my gosh, I can't remember the name of it, but it's basically this 3-part series where it's like a cult that this guy started where you're basically trying to find like your twin. Oh, I think it's called Escaping Twin Flames. They're basically trying to parry with people. That was a crazy one. It was really, really good.
All right. You watched Shrinking on Apple?
No, I've never watched it. Okay. That's with Harrison Ford.
That's Harrison Ford. I mean, it's a great show because the generations really connect and collide on that show in a good way. So you get to see things from a young daughter. You get to see things from a Parkinson's patient.
Yes, I saw
it's really amazing stuff.
Michael J. Fox?
Yes, yeah. So add Shrinking to your list. Also, The Pit on HBO.
I've heard that
in its second season. You're going to learn something every episode. You're probably going to be grossed out a little bit by some of the blood and guts.
But
lot of social, political issues are being discussed through that show. And they've handled it in a really creative way, too. Ooh. So I feel like I learn when I watch that show.
Sure.
I'm also deeply entertained, and you're just engrossed because of the chaos of being in the ER in a city that is very similar to Milwaukee, Pittsburgh. Another reason I love it, too,
because
Pittsburgh is a great city.
What channel is that on our streaming service?
HBO Max.
HBO Max. I've got that. Okay.
All
I'll
right.
add that to the list.
Add it to your list. When we come back, I want to get your thoughts on paying for sunshine. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio by Martin Moore. It's the future of almost everything. In the future, Martin, some are saying we may have to pay for our sunshine. I love having you on the show because you are bringing sunshine each and every day, no matter what. But there's a startup in Los Angeles County that is awaiting regulatory clearance to make sunshine on demand a reality. Basically, they want to sell the rights and the lights to illuminate areas on Earth at night. These locations would include whatever, maybe solar farms, maybe strategic operations that need light at night, maybe even public events. The company is Reflect Orbital, and they promise to deliver a spot of sunlight on demand. Pricing, I've seen $1,000, $2,000 for 30 seconds. They don't have all that set. They're raising money. They're trying to get clearance for this. Would you tap on an app to get sunlight whenever and wherever you want?
For $1,000?
For $1,000.
No? On the long list of things I would spend $1,000 on for 30 seconds, sunlight would not be on that list.
So what do you think? We're going to see.
Do we know how they plan on
satellites and kind of
like
mirror
meters?
Imaging and meter. Yeah, yeah. I think they're raising money, working through the business model right now, and probably dreaming a little bit.
Yeah.
But what's I don't know. I always think of these type of things that, hey, it sounds great in concept, right? If we could have sunlight wherever, whenever we want, at whatever price, great.
Sure.
But what are we not thinking about when we're doing something like that?
You know, skin cancer comes to mind.
Yes.
You know, I think anytime you try and artificially direct sunlight. Heat is going to be associated with that. And if you're doing that in an area that's been naturally dark, how does that change ecosystems? How does that extra light change animals that may or may not be in hibernation? So you look at something like, let's say you live in Anchorage, Alaska, where, you know, in February or January or whenever their thing is, it's, you know, you have almost all nighttime light. And all of a sudden you start putting sunlight in there and you have animals that, you know, are hibernating, or maybe you have certain plants that, you know, that hibernate. And remember in Milwaukee when we had that one year where it got like really warm out and all the trees and stuff started like budding, and then like we got that freeze, and then like we were just kind of screwed for the rest of the spring.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a lot of implications like that that may arise. Luckily, I don't think this is very realistic on the grand scheme of ideas, so I'm not that particularly worried about it, but we are human beings and we've invented dumber stuff, so
that is true. It kind of feels like daylight saving time being weaponized a little bit by the private sector, and I don't think we need that. If you need a little bit more sunshine in your life, you know, think
much
some
cheaper
positive
than
thoughts. Get on a plane and fly out of
NKE,
right?
For $175 bucks round trip on Southwest,
or buy a sunshine lamp.
That was for 4 days. Yeah, get a sunshine lamp.
All right, I wanted to get your take finally here on the California jury last week that found Meta and Google were to blame for depression and anxiety of a woman who compulsively used social media as a small child, awarded her $6 million. Yep. A pretty rare verdict in these type of tech cases. Also in New Mexico, Meta was ordered to pay $375 million in damages for failing to protect young users from child predators on Instagram and Facebook. I know you're not a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer either. But what do you think is next here in these type of cases, and can we hold companies to account?
I think we're going to see more of them, and I think they should be held to account. Like, you and me spend a bunch of time on social media as grown adults, and we get trapped doom scrolling, or we get bamboozled into whatever, you know, sort of shame on us. We should know better. But when you talk about a kid and a child where their brain is still developing, they're still very easily manipulated. We saw this with e-cigarettes. You know, all this stuff is premeditated and calculated, and we know algorithms are designed to keep us on the apps and scrolling, and to take someone like a child whose brain is so susceptible to that and to manipulate it in a way where they can get on there and get bullied and cyber-stalked, and there's predators sliding in their DMs, and they're seeing pornography in their feeds, and all the illicit things that we see as adults on the internet and we can do something about and understand and compartmentalize. These kids are seeing war, they're seeing death, they're seeing, you know, all kinds of things they shouldn't, and it can mess them up. And there's a reason why depression in teens is on the rise. There's a reason why teen suicide is absolutely out of control right now, and social media is definitely not helping that. It's exacerbating it. And so I'm fine with this. I have no problems with it.
So do these cases, especially on the jury trial level, where you're really kind of hitting Americana getting their thoughts and input, do they move us towards age gating? With some of these platforms, is that possible now?
Yeah. I mean, New Zealand did it. Yeah. You know, I think in New Zealand they just passed a law where I think you have to be 16 to be on the app. Instagram is doing, I think, I keep getting ads for it. I don't know why, because they know my age, but they keep saying, asking me if I want to sign up for a teen account.
Yeah.
But I know Instagram is working on creating a special sort of experience. YouTube has YouTube Kids. So I think more or less they're not going to do it by choice. They're either going to do it out of fear that these lawsuits are going to keep coming, or there's going to be some sort of government regulation that's going to force them to either create more kid-friendly experiences where there is no algorithm involved. If you're a kid and you're on social media, you shouldn't be having people who you don't follow, didn't approve to follow, popping in your feed or being able to message you. And I think there just needs to be a lot more safety protocols for kids on social media. I don't think they should be on it at all, period, but that's just me.
So if we get to age gating, what is that age going to be?
I think 16. I think that's a fine age, and I think it doesn't – because the other thing is social media, when used correctly, as we know – it can be a massive tool. You know, you could be a young kid and you could have a great app or a great idea. You could be a young photographer or a young YouTuber. Make money. Make a career off of it. So you want to make sure that you're very careful and nuanced about taking away the tools that these kids are going to be using as they grow out through adult life. And so it's a tricky conversation.
Yeah. Martin Moore, the future of almost everything. Always appreciate your time. Happy Easter. We'll see you next month. Finally, this beautiful Easter weekend, I'm going to tell you, get out of your car, take a walk, and create. I want you to do some thinking about what your neighborhood, or what maybe any neighborhood near you, really needs. So last weekend, a friend of mine called and said, Jeff, I just had this very Jeff Sherman moment and I had to call you. I'm like, oh, wow, that's really nice of you to say. And he said, all right, I just drove to my favorite butcher shop in Bayview, Milwaukee's beautiful Bayview neighborhood. He went to Buddy's Meat Market and he found out that it wasn't open yet. I'm like, dude, why don't you just look online or like give him a call? He's like, I know I should have done that. So he had an extra hour to walk around Bayview and he was amazed at all the places he found. Also kind of amazed that every street sign in Bayview seems to be a state in the United States, right? And he's like, wow, I found all these new streets I didn't know about. And I laughed because I totally knew what he meant. And it reminded us both of how important it is to get out of our cars and actually experience the city and communities we live in, especially the neighborhoods that aren't our own. When we walk and we see things differently, we see how the street feels, we see what's open, what's closed, what the storefronts invite us into, and how people use these spaces, it gives us this perspective and this insight that says, wow, I want this in my neighborhood. So especially this Easter weekend, go to another neighborhood, walk around, get some upswing motivation, and find some things in a neighborhood that you want to bring to your own. It doesn't take any extra time. You got plenty of time this weekend, so carve out some of it, just an hour. Take a walk around a neighborhood. Do some creative placemaking, and who knows? Maybe you're going to notice that spark of an idea, that idea for a new business or an insight that you want to share with local leaders. Get out of the car, walk, and create. Have a great weekend.
That's good.